ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
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 In Sri Vishnu Sahasranam, name 518 is Mukunda, well-known and favorite name among the devotees, and Vyasadeva likes it also. It comes up 83 times in Srimad Bhagavatam. I just had a, thanks to the Veda base, we can make such a search. The most occurring name is Krishna, 712 times in Srimad Bhagavatam. But that also includes when it's not the name of Krishna. It can be used to mean black also. But mostly it's referring to the Supreme Lord. Bhagavan, I didn't check through because there's so many times Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. It's introductory. The next name, by far the biggest, is Hari, 502 occurrences. Govinda, 68, less than Mukunda. Madhava, only 38. How many times Gopinath comes? Any guesses? Zero. The name or the word Gopal comes 24 times, but it mostly doesn't refer to Krishna. Mostly refers to the cowherd boys or the cowherd men. And it may refer to Krishna, Gopala Sutta, and often, so hardly, not much referring directly to Krishna. Of course, there are whole stotras. Gopala Sahasranam is there. We also have Mukunda Mala Stotra. Achyuta, the name comes up 176 times. Important name. Vishnu, I didn't... that definitely comes many times. Narayan's 150. Madhusudan, 19. Murari, 9. Keshava, 50. Janardhan, 33. So definitely... Rama, I didn't look up. But Rama in the 10th canto will mostly refer to Balaram. And then in the 9th canto to Raghupati Raghava Raja Ram. It doesn't refer much to Krishna directly. So, it's a favorite and common name. The name given in the both by the Sri Vaishnav commentator Parashara Bhatta and Shankaracharya, they both give the same meaning, the one who gives liberation. That's the general understanding of the name. Although, according to general Sanskrit grammatical rules, you couldn't translate the name Mukunda as the giver of liberation. But both Shankara and Parashara Bhatta, they quote a rule from Parinini, which more or less says that, well, that's what all the ancient great people said, so you can go along with it. Arsha Prayog, we would say. That it's accepted, that's the meaning. Even though, according to other grammatical rules, it doesn't fit. So they all agree, Mukunda means the giver of liberation. Of course, between the Vaishnavas and the followers of Shankara, there's a lot of difference in the understanding of what liberation means. But one thing we'll find in all the Vedantic sampradayas, or follow Vedantists, we can say. It's a Sanskrit-English hybrid word. Vedantin would be the Sanskrit word, is that they all presume liberation is the highest goal. Atato Brahma Jignasa begins the Vedanta Sutra. And the last one is Shabdad Nivritti. That one gets liberation by hearing all this. So that's one interpretation. Three times said. So they're very concerned with liberation, attaining to the status of Brahman. What is that status? There's much difference, but they all the Vaishnava sampradayas emphasize it, not Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's sampradaya. They don't give so much. They don't give importance so much on liberation, which means, well, that means the name Mukunda, then it doesn't have so much importance. Well, it is very important for the devotees, most of the devotees, not so much followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Of course, the Vaishnavas, Sri Vaishnavas and others, they want liberation for the purpose of serving the Lord. Their idea is, mukti means one attains the position of kainkarya, direct service to the Lord. But still, they emphasize a lot. He gives mukti, he releases us from this. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also says, Ai nanda tanaja kinkarang patitang maam ashame bhavam badhau kripaya tavapada pangaja stitha dhuli sadrisham vishintya. Release me from this horrible existence in this material world. I am your eternal servant. I forgot that. Place me as one of the atoms in the dust of your lotus feet. And of course, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the same Shikshashtaka gives us Nadhanam, Najanam, Nasundarim, Kavitam, Bhajagadisha, Kame, Mama Janmane, Janmanishvare, Bhavatad, Bhakti, Rahaitu, Kitvai. What do I want from you? I'm subordinate to you, you're superior to me, I'm coming to you, I'm asking something. What is that? Nothing material. No money, wealth, fame, followers, nothing of the sort. And not even liberation. Only I desire the opportunity to serve you, even if that's in every birth. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he gave this concept, which we can find if we read Bhagavatam with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's understanding. Then we can find that simply to be liberated is not the goal of the devotees, the pure devotees. They only want the opportunity to serve Krishna. This name, comes up many times in Bhagavatam. I'll just recite a couple of verses. The gopis also, they address or refer to Krishna as Mukunda. Why so? Gas. Gas Kabu, Hara. Why so is we'll get to that. So a favorite, it's a very favorite and common name. Here's a very beautiful verse from the first canto. Narad Muni's instructions to Vyasadeva, in which he's stating that he's describing how you went through all the Vedas, you did your job, well done, but you just missed the point, that's all. Shranga eva hi kevalam. So he describes the glories of pure devotional service to Vyas. Therein he states, Navai jano jatu katanchana vrajin mukunda sevyanyavadanga sansritim Smaran mukundang hyupaguhanang punavihatamichin narasakraho janaha. The word Mukunda comes up twice here. Mukunda Sevi, the servant of Mukunda. And Mukunda Angri, the lotus feet of Mukunda. He says, my dear Vyas, even though a devotee of Lord Krishna sometimes falls down somehow or other, he certainly does not undergo material existence like others, fruitive workers, etc. Because a person who has once relished the taste of the lotus feet of the Lord can do nothing but remember that ecstasy again and again. So that's one verse from Bhagavatam. From the, I'm just choosing here because I'm not going to recite all 80 plus verses from the Bhagavatam now. From the 10th canto of Bhagavatam, description of the rainy season and autumn. Now this chapter describes the rainy season and then the autumn. So a description of the autumn. Sharad. Sharadarkang shu jangs ta pan bhutanam urupo harat. Can you understand that? Sharad means the autumn. Arka, do you know what Arka means? That name will come up, still to come up in Vishnu Sahasranam. It's one of the names of the sun. Arkangshu means the rays of the sun. Jangs ta pan, so it means the heat of the sun rays in autumn. Bhutanam udupo harat. Udupo, you get any idea what that means? Bhutanam means all living beings. Udupo, udupaha means the moon. Aharat. The moon, the autumn moon removed the distress. Tapa can mean heat and it can mean distress. So it removed the distress of all living beings from the heat. Dehabhimana jangbodho mukunda vraja yoshitam. The autumn moon relieved all creatures of the suffering caused by the sun rays, just as wisdom. In this chapter, there are many, describes some natural phenomena and then gives an analogy to go with that. Just as wisdom relieves a person of the misery caused by his identifying with his material body, and as Lord Mukunda relieves Vrindavan's ladies of this distress caused by their separation from him. So there's another idea of Mukunda. He can liberate you from the, mostly people think of liberation, dehabhimana jang buddhi, the idea that I am this body, the abhiman, that sometimes is translated as conceit, or the conception that I am this body. Mukti means to be freed from that conception. But for the gopis, their idea of Mukunda being free, he releases us from the pain of separation from him. So that's a completely different take on liberation. The gopis, they don't want to be liberated and merge into some impersonal Brahman. They want to be with Krishna. So he relieves them from the distress. That's also, during the daytime, they don't get to see him. During the night, with the moon, they get to see him more. In the daytime, they're in Vrindavan suffering. Every moment, like 12 years or more, in separate, the days go on very long, 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 dragging out. Then he comes home in the evening, and then at night they all go out. The moon is their companion in their pastimes. So there's all kinds of poetic nuances in this. If one has good knowledge and feeling and is blessed by Shuddha Saraswati, one can enter into all these, all the nuances of this Bhagavatam. One can enjoy bhakti rasa. So this is the mukti that pure devotees aspire for. That is why the name Mukunda is very dear to pure devotee. Not because, oh Mukunda, okay, just shoot me off to the impersonal Brahman. Devotees don't want any such thing. They want to be liberated from this material consciousness so that they can become eligible to serve him. That's the meaning which the aspiring devotees, they aspire for. They don't pray for liberation from material existence per se, from material suffering. But they aspire from freedom from material consciousness, dehabhimana, as mentioned in this verse, of identifying with the body, or identifying with the mind. They want to identify themselves as servants of Krishna. So there, we can pray to Mukunda for this consciousness. Liberate me from the foolish consciousness of considering myself to be the body or the mind or anything else but your servant. And that that is the meaning of... then one can enter the spiritual world and serve Krishna. That is the meaning of mukti given in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Muktir hitvanyata rupam swarupena vyavastiti. He, mukti, means to give up these presumed or assumed forms and attain and be situated in one's actual form. Here's another usage of the word Mukunda. From the description of Aghasura, Krishna delivered the residents of Vrindavan from the dangers of so many demons. And from so many different demons, from forest fire, from rain. But the biggest trouble, the greatest distress they had was any moment they had separation from him, including for the gopis blinking their eyes. That was considered as reason enough to say that Brahma doesn't know what he's doing. So, described there when Krishna killed Aghasura by entering into his mouth and blocking up his breathing function by expanding his body. Even though the demon expanded his body, Krishna expanded more. So when the demon's life air had passed away through the hole in the top of his head at a yogi's departure through the Brahmarandra, Krishna glanced over the dead calves and cowherd boys and brought them back to life. Krishna did this more than once. He got killed by drinking the water of the Yamuna. He brought them back to life. Then Mukunda came out from the demon's mouth with his friends and the calves. So he's called Mukunda. He killed Aghasura and in this way gave him liberation. Everyone saw that the spirit soul of Aghasura came out and entered into Krishna's body. So he gave Aghasura liberation, while he gave liberation to his friends from being in the body of Aghasura. Agha Baka Putana. He was the last one. Putana got killed, then Baka got killed. They're all brothers and sisters. What a family. So Krishna finished them all off. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught Krishna Bishayak Prem Param Purusharta Jar Age Trinatula Chari Purusharta. This, the Chari Purusharta, the four goals of life. Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says that love focused on Krishna is the actual, the highest goal of human life, in comparison with which all this dharma, artha, kama, moksha is just insignificant. Which is quite a remarkable statement, seeing as all the Vedas appear to be aiming at either or a combination of dharma, artha, karma, and or moksha. So these four things, Srimad Bhagavatam begins, Kaitava Dharma Projita Atra. In herein, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, cheating religion is rejected. In the beginning of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami describes that what is this cheating religion? He didn't actually have in mind Sai Baba. I mean, Sai Baba's, you know, doesn't even make it on the radar. It's just so ridiculous. But he's talking about dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. That religious processes which are meant to be practicing dharma for the sake of getting artha or kama or moksha, he refers to that as cheating religion. He describes that's the cheating religion that Vyasadeva has in mind. And he states, Taramodde mokha bancha kaitav pradhan. Among all these kinds of cheating, the desire for liberation is the worst, or the chief one. Jaha hoite Krishna bhakti hoi antardhan, because it makes the Krishna bhakti vanish. So what happened to Mukunda? He's giving liberation, but the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu consider that to be cheating. So Krishna, he can give liberation, but that's not really his greatest, that's not really what he comes, what he wants. In the Bhagavatam, we find Narad Muni describes to Yudhishthir, Rajan Patir Guru Ralang Bhavatam Yadu Nam, Daivang Priyakula Pati, Kvacha Kinkaro Vaha, Astvevang Anga Bhagavan Vajitang Mukundo Mukting Dadati Karhichit Smana Bhakti Yogam. He says, Rajan, O my dear king, this person, no, it's Shukadev to Parikshit. Shukadev to Parikshit. That's what it's called. It's a similar thing that Narad said to Yudhishthir, that the Supreme Person, Mukunda, is the maintainer of all the members of the Pandavas and the Yadu dynasty. Bhavatam, all of you, and Yadunam, the Yadu dynasty. He's the Pati. He is your spiritual master, worshipable deity, friend, and director of your activities. He sometimes serves your family as a messenger or servant. This means that he worked just as like a servant. He became your servant. Those engaged in getting the Lord's favor attain liberation from the Lord very easily. But he does not very easily give the opportunity to render direct service unto him. In other words, he's Mukunda, but that's not Mukunda. He gives mukti. I want mukti, okay. But bhakti, oh, he won't give that very easily, because by bhakti he comes under the control of his devotee. Then he's obliged, he feels himself obliged to become the servant of the devotees in this regard, Bilva Mangalore Thakur in his Krishna Karanamrita states, as often quoted by Srila Prabhupada, Bhaktistvai sthira tara Bhagavan yadi syad daivena na phalati divya kishora murtihi mukti swayam mukhalitanjali sevate sman dharmartha kama gataya samaya pratikshaha. If I am engaged in devotional service unto you, my dear Lord, who is mukti, if I'm engaged in devotional service unto you, then very easily I can perceive your presence everywhere. As Divya Kishora Murti, the divine form of a youthful boy. And as far as liberation is concerned, Mukti stands at my door with folded hands, waiting to serve me, along with Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha. So devotees, they don't think this Mukti, it's they don't give so much importance. The one of the characteristics of pure devotional service, one of the six characteristics of pure devotional service that Rupa Goswami describes is mukti laghutakrit. Makes mukti moksha laghutakrit. Thank you. It makes moksha or mukti seem very insignificant. What this mukti that people are trying for so hard, Krishna can give very easily, but he doesn't give bhakti very easily. It makes, in comparison with, and this verse is cited, Raja Patir Guru Ralang Bhavatang Yadu Nam, these, and Bhaktis Twai Stiratara, these are cited by Rupa Goswami to show that in comparison with bhakti, moksha, mukti, it's nothing, it's very insignificant, very unimportant. Now, here is a verse from the 10th canto, Brahma's prayers to Krishna. After Brahma thought, oh, I made a fool of myself by trying to show my mystic power by stealing the boys and calves, and then, oh, Krishna's mystic power is so much greater than mine. He reproduced them all. For a whole year, they were going on, and their parents, and they didn't know. So, Brahma, among his important prayers to Krishna, he says, Agyana Sangyo Bhavabandha Mokshao Dvo Namananyao Stat Ritagyat Bhavat Ajasra Chityatmani Kevale Pare Vicharya Marne Tarana Vivahani. Now, just consider this about moksha. The conception of material bondage and the conception of liberation are both manifestations of ignorance. So people are interested in mukti, but Brahma says anyway, the whole idea of being mukti or non-mukti, it's all a manifestation of ignorance. Being outside the scope of true knowledge, they cease to exist when one correctly understands that the pure spirit soul is distinct from matter and always fully conscious. At that time, bondage and liberation no longer have any significance, just as day and night have no significance from the perspective of the sun. In other words, as long as we're in the position of ignorance, we think that mukti is something very important. But when you're liberated, you see, anyway, what does it mean, this mukti? It's a meaningless thing. That's why a devotee can be apparently in material existence, but he's not in material existence because he's always liberated. Just as the sun is always shining brightly, and those who are under the cloud, for them they think, oh, cloud, oh, we can't see the sun because of the cloud, but the cloud is very insignificant in relationship to the sun. person, yeah, this liberated state is described in the Bhagavatam by Kapila Dev. The worship of Krishna in the mode of goodness, those who want to worship Krishna in the mode of goodness, in order to get free from karma nihara, that means the fog of karma. Karma nihara mudisha parasmin va tadarpanam yajed yashtavyam iti va pritag bhava sattvikaha. When a devotee worships the Supreme Personality of Godhead and offers the results of his activities in order to free himself from the inebrieties of fruitive activities, his devotion is in the mode of goodness, and he's a pritag bhava. He's not really doing it for Krishna's sake. So even one is worshipping Krishna with the idea of getting free from material bondage, it may be sattvic, but it's not pure devotion. Pure devotion is described by Kapila Dev. Mar guna shruti matrina mai sarva guhashaye manogati ravichinna yatha gangam hasom budhau lakshanam bhakti yogasya nirgunasya hiyudahritam ahaityokyavya vahita ya bhakti purushottame. The manifestation of unadulterated devotional service is exhibited when one's mind is at once attracted to hearing the transcendental name and qualities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is residing in everyone's heart. Just as the water of the Ganga flows naturally down toward the ocean, such devotional ecstasy, uninterrupted by any material condition, flows toward the Supreme Lord. So in Shuddha Sattva, there's not even any mention of mukti. It's just one's attracted to Krishna. And mukti, it's not even considered. That's for the persons who are worshipping Krishna in the mode of goodness. So this mukti is a major important point. It could be talked about for years and lifetimes. In fact, bahunam janmanamante gyanavang mang prabandhite. It's talked about for lifetimes and lifetimes and lifetimes, and they don't get it until they surrender to Mukunda. And that those who have actually surrendered to Mukunda, they don't think it's very important. They don't give any particular importance to that kind of... They want the mukti of being freed from separation from Krishna. Therefore, the Gaudiya commentator, Baladev Vidyabhushan, he gives a completely different meaning of the name Mukunda. Interpretation. He gives the understanding that mukti means his face is as beautiful as a kunda flower. His smiling face is as beautiful as a kunda flower. If you don't know what a kunda flower looks like, there it is. There's a photo of a kunda, which you've all seen, those of you who are living in India. That's a different meaning. Again, as the Sanskrit goes, I don't know. Muk means face, but not muk. It's muk. So it's, well, mu means muk. And muk, kunda. Kunda is the kunda flower, which is also mentioned in the Bhagavatam. The gopis, when searching for Krishna, they ask all the different flowers and trees. Where is Krishna? Have you seen him? So it's known to be very white. So just like in the Western world, where there's snow very, very white. So they may say white as snow. So in the Vedic and corollary literatures, in the Kavyas and so on, they'll say as white as kunda, very white. Beautiful white teeth are often compared to kunda buds. It is especially sacred to Vishnu, so it's very good for offering. It's in the modern scientific taxonomy, I believe that's the word, it's described as within the genus of jasmine. So all the flowers which are classed as jasmine, they're very dear to Vishnu, they're very suitable for offering to him. Here's an example of Kunda in Sanskrit literature from one Shubhashita. This collection of Shubhashita. Shubhashita, I mean, there are various collections of nice sayings which are in Sanskrit verses, and they may be from here and there. Ete sumalasadbhaso rajanti kunda kaurakaha shita bhita lata kundam ashrita ivatarakaha. These kunda buds shine with a glistening sheen as if stars, terrified of the cold, have taken refuge in the kunda creeper. So it's very poetic. That means someone has seen the kunda flower just budding and appreciated and inspired by Saraswati, has given some poetic description of, oh, it's like the stars have run inside to the kunda creeper to take shelter there. Shita bhita lata kundam ashrita ivatara kaha. So there's an example of that. Is there any? No, just one. Okay, this is some biological. Oh, yeah, there is another. Kalidas writes, Kundai sa vibrama vadhu hasit avadatair udyotitanyup Pavanani manoharani chittam munerapi haranti nivritta ragam prageva raga malinani manansi pungsam. The grounds enchantingly lit up with kunda flowers white as the laugh of women at play distract even the ascetic who has renounced all human affection. How much more ordinary men tainted by passion. Okay, some biological katha. The kunda is one of the many forms of jasmine found in India, identified as Jasminum multiflorum or Jasminum pubescens. It is a creeper with small white flowers, proverbially white, along with other favorites of poets like the moon and snow, and like foam and any white object, flowering kundas represent laughter, not fragrant except early morning, just at sunrise, it emits very delicate fragrance. So it's a bit biological, another discussion. So if you can remember all those things, then next time you hear the name Mukunda, you can think of all these things. Hare Krishna. Bolo Hari Hari Mukunda Murari. He quoted that verse, and then he wanted to change the mukti to bhakti, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, no, you can't change. What's that verse? Muktida. What is that verse? Just look up Muktida. What's the question anyway? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said you can't change the verse. The Vyasadeva wrote it like that for a particular purpose.
It's one word?
Yeah, should be one word. Muktida. Muktida, Muktidata. The giver of liberation. It's a well-known verse somehow. It didn't trigger in my mind the first line.
Something from Govinda Vidavali comes.
No. There it is. Bhakti Pade. Tatenu kamban susamikshamano bunjane vatma kritang vipakam. Vigvar gvapu bhe vidhan namaste. Jivete yo mukti pade sadaya bhak. Well, that's a specific context, isn't it? That Krishna delivers one from all material misery. So the devotee thinks, well, he can deliver me if he wants to, but he's not, so I just accept it.
Another thing that I wanted to ask is that even kama and even kama and artha are also spiritually, say, spiritual suicide. So, increase of kama and artha also takes one away from Krishna. So
yeah, that's kaitav dharma, kama and artha, but not as bad as moksha. The idea of moksha without bhakti means that you want to merge in some impersonal Brahman, so that kills bhakti. But if you have karma, you can pray to Krishna for that, to fulfill your desire. If you ask Mukunda for liberation, he can give. But people who do, if you ask Mukunda, then akama sarva kama va moksha kama udara dihiti reina bhakti yogena yajita. And if you want him, even if you want him personal liberation, you can worship Krishna. Then your desire may change, like the four Kumaras or Shukadev. Because Amaramas Chamureo Negranta Apyarukrame Kurvantya Haitukim Bhaktin Itamputa Guno Harehe. They become attracted. Why did Shukadev undertake the study of such a massive work as the Srimad Bhagavatam when he was already liberated? That's the answer. He himself said, what is that? It's never in good order. Even though I was liberated, adhitavan dvaparado pita. Pita dvapayane vayam. Something like that. Adhitavan. I studied it at the beginning of Dwarpa Yuga, which means the end of Dwarpa Yuga. What is that? Pari something Naragunye. It's in Bhagavatam.
Yeah, I'm not getting the spelling, sir.
Oh, then name it. Okay, give it to me then now. Parinishtita Naragunye Uttamashtoka Lilaya Grihita Chaita Raja Se Akyanam Yat Adhitavan I was situated perfectly in transcendence, yet I was still attracted by the delineation of the pastimes of the Lord, who is described by enlightened verses. That's why he... Yeah. Then how do you get to the... And it comes again. Oh, now it's coming up in the Madhyalila. Yeah, there it is. Idam Bhagavatam Nama Puranam Brahma Samhitam Adhitavan Dvaparado Pitur Dvaipayanadaham. At the end of Dvapara Yuga, I studied this great supplement of Vedic literature named Srimad Bhagavatam, which is equal to the Vedas, from my father, Srila Dvaipayana Vyasadev. This is all the reply. Why? Why did he study? Why did he study so many things? He's already liberated. Okay.